Hello, my friends. This is your boy, Nathan Crankfield, and I come to you with some really sad news today. This here is just going to be a little pre-intro to the intro. I've already recorded an intro, but this is something that I've felt like I needed to announce because it's been on my heart for some time now. And so I have some sad news to announce before we kick off this highly anticipated and excited podcast. You know, this topic of stay-at-home moms has been a popular one on social media in the last week or so. So we recorded this episode prior to this, and I'm excited to now be releasing that and our thoughts on this and our journey to Emily becoming a stay-at-home mom. But my sad news that I have to announce today is that this will be one of the last episodes of the Seeking Excellence podcast. I know many of you have been listening for years now, and it's just come time that I've decided that this will be one of the last episodes of Seeking Excellence. Probably, maybe, at least potentially. Let me get to what I'm saying. I have decided that if we don't get to 100 local supporters by September 1st, I will be stopping the Seeking Excellence podcast. And I come to this, I think, you know, when I've shared this with some family and friends and talked to people about it, like, some people are like, are you just reacting emotionally? Are you just kind of discouraged or, you know, in a place of negativity or whatever? And my answer to that is kinda, but that's not the full story. Am I discouraged by the number of supporters that we've been able to pick up over the last, you know, 9 to 12 months of doing locals? To an extent, yeah, I have been. And I shared this to say thank you to the people who have been local supporters. You've heard me talk about this a number of times on the podcast, but we've been losing money every year that I've been doing Seeking Excellence. Now, as a husband and father, losing money into this, you know, this ministry, this mission is what I like to call it, is not something that I'm really interested in doing anymore. And to me, it just seems like it makes sense that if by September 1st, which will be just after the 4-year anniversary of the podcast, over 300 episodes will have been released, and I'll have been doing this for 4 years. If over 4 years and 300 episodes, there aren't 100 people in the world who believe that Seeking Excellence is worth supporting at $10 a month or more, then I don't think I should do it anymore. I think that there are other ways and avenues to utilize my time and my talent and my resources that I think would be better for my family. They'd be more effective for advancing this mission of sharing this philosophy and this knowledge with the world. Does not mean that I would be canceling locals, because I'd probably still be putting content out on there for the people who actually care, who actually are invested in, who actually want to support. Now, I like doing this free content, and I've been doing it for 300 episodes. You can imagine how much time that's taken to prepare, record, edit, upload the podcast and all of that. I've been doing it for a long time. I'm very grateful to the family and friends who have been supporting since the day that they could. And those people do exist. But to me, like, I just think back to the early days of Halo, you know, and one of my best friends from high school, Alessandro, being one of the co-founders. He signed up to do this and sent me the Kickstarter when they were sharing it. And I posted about it and I shared and I did what I could to help them. And I donated to it. And of course, even though I wasn't using the app very much back then, I bought a Halo subscription because it was one of my best friends and I appreciated what they were doing. I believed in their mission. Same goes for Exodus 90. I don't ever open the Exodus 90 app. I've done Exodus 90 completely one time, but I've met the guys. I believe in what they're doing. I've heard the testimonies of people who have experienced it. And so even though I don't utilize any of their content, I still give Exodus 90 $10 a month because that's what the subscription costs. And it's not even a tax write-off anymore. They've changed to being a for-profit company. And I don't utilize any of the content. I get no value from it. Dynamic Catholic. I worked there. We had not a great separation at the end, where basically my job was eliminated. I was offered a different position. I chose not to take it and to move on with my life. Because of the impact Dynamic Catholic made in my life 10 years ago, I still give Dynamic Catholic $10 a month. The other organization I do this for is The Daily Wire. Another one that's not a tax write-off. But I appreciate what they've done for me in my life, the impact it's made in my life, the content that they create, and I believe in their mission to create conservative, alternative media for people to consume. And so I give them, I don't even know what it is, $110, $120 a year, $150 a year. I think we pay for two subscriptions for Emily and I. And I barely even listen to their podcast anymore. Very rarely get on their website to check out the articles and things like that. So, but I just think that if I can do this for 4 years, have hundreds of thousands of downloads, have thousands of people listening every month, have people reaching out, have met so many people, know a lot of people who I know personally who listen to these episodes. And to me, if not even 100 people believe in it enough to support at $10 a month, then I think that I might be exaggerating how much I should believe in it. I think that I've put in time, I put in the effort, and I'm tired of losing money on it. I'm tired of prioritizing it if it's not a priority or it doesn't mean that much to other people. I'm grateful for the impact that it's made in other people's lives, in the listeners, in the supporters' lives, which is why I would continue to do some of the content for the supporters. And I think I would just invest my time and efforts into other things. I really enjoy coaching basketball. I'd love to start up a men's group. There's other ways that I could pour my efforts into things that I think would still be building the kingdom and still not be for money. But we could host more families. We could host people. I could host people for this men's group and have money to put towards that instead of putting it into this. And so that is a very real sentiment and feeling that I have. And mind you, it's not just supporting at $10 a month, but on Locals, I do extra content. I give away books to local supporters twice a year and do book clubs like we just did during Lent and we did during the fall with the Screwtape Letters and the Introduction to the Devout Life, and do videos and exclusive content on there. I'm going to be posting articles and doing weekly live streams on Locals that are just more Seeking Excellence content. So my promise to you, my vow to you is that if I'm going to go out in these next 4 months, I'm going to go out with a bang. And I'm going to make these next 4 months some of the best content that's ever existed on Seeking Excellence. This episode in particular is a topic that I'm very, very passionate about. And I am going to be really going deep into the mindset of being a Catholic provider as a man, talking about some of the most Seeking Excellence fundamental topics, because the podcast will continue to exist and be around, even if I do choose to stop in September. And I'm just going to have great guests on. I'm going to be more intentional than ever before with crafting this solo podcast that I do. I'm going to be more consistent than ever before and have better content on Locals than I ever have, with writing those weekly articles, with doing the weekly coaching calls, uploading the videos on there each week, and all of that. And so I'm going to go all in for these next 4 months. I'm going to take things to the next level. But all I can tell you is that I think that if I get to September 1st and there's not even 100 people in the world that think this is worth $10 a month, then this is probably going to be the end of the Seeking Excellence podcast. So this isn't to be negative. I hope you still enjoy this episode. I still have loved doing this. But if you've been on the fence about it, I encourage you to check it out and just become a free member on Locals. A lot of the content is free there. You can see and discern if you think that it's worthwhile. And if you're somebody, I've had people reach out before, and I'm grateful for you, that are consistent listeners that have said, man, you know, I'm in college, or I'm just getting started in my career, or I'm a missionary, money's tight. But eventually I hope to be able to financially support Seeking Excellence. I hope to become a subscriber. That means the world to me. And if you can still just become a free member on Locals and you're in that type of situation, I'm happy to gift you a membership so you can have access to all the content. So if that's you, shoot me a message and let me know. And even you guys joining for free still gives me some encouragement that you're doing the things that you're, you know, bought in and you believe in the mission and you think that the content that I'm putting out is worthwhile. But, and so I'm just, you know, there's so many things to do in this life, in this world. I'm a family man. I got a family to support. It was one thing to just blow money on this little passion project hobby when I was just me. But now that we have a family that we're hoping to grow, and thinking about this idea and this topic of being a Catholic provider, I got to be a good steward with my time, with my resources, and with my talent. And so without further ado, thank you for listening. Let's get to today's episode. Now for the real intro to today's episode. What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Seeking Excellence podcast. Today, It's one of my favorite episodes. Of course, I have my wife. We've been married for just over 2 years. We just hit our 2-year anniversary right around when this podcast was recorded. And so if you know our journey, we had a baby about a year in. Our son is just about to turn 1, and he's just been a huge blessing in our lives and just really awesome to have around. But one of the things of our journey is that I came from a background of really not ever expecting to have a stay-at-home wife. I dated women who had careers, some who were nurses, some who were CPAs, and were just a lot of whom were very career-driven. And so it was just kind of an assumption for me after having a working mom myself. My mom just didn't work 9 to 5. She also a lot of times had to work weekends and overtime. She worked very hard for me to be able to go to Catholic school. So this idea of being a stay-at-home mom was never on my radar. And now I've come a long way to where I really think that is the ideal. And so we're going to talk about that today. We're going to debate that a little bit. We're going to get into some of my journey and my experience of coming to my stance on this, my stance that I know is fairly strong and kind of a hot take on the aspect of being a stay-at-home mother, but I think is really good for the church, for the family, for the world, when we can strive to make this happen. And so just to give it a little bit of context as well, I'm going to be doing more kind of coaching and content and videos, especially geared at men and husbands and fathers, to talk about ways that we can help to make that happen, right? I had to get creative. As you know, if you know our journey and our story, you know that that's true, from our Airbnb to my speaking to other ventures that I have going on. It is not done without sacrifice, and it is not done easily. And so I think that that's a real thing, and it's a real concern that people have. And I don't think that you need to necessarily rush into it. And there's a lot of caveats you can give in that realm, but we're going to talk about a lot of that. The episode covers a lot of those things. But first, I want to tell you about today's show sponsor, which is Candid Dating. If you've been watching this podcast or listening to this podcast for a long time, if you're watching on YouTube or you listen on Apple or Spotify, amazing. I know that these are some of the most popular episodes that Emily and I do together. And maybe you're somebody out there who wants to get married. You want to find your own Nathan or Emily, right? You want to find your husband or your wife. And Candid Dating exists exactly for that purpose. And so, Taylor, my friend, she's been on the podcast before. She founded Candid Dating as an opportunity to give Catholics a different option from modern dating apps. And so you have a lot of modern dating apps where it's swiping and all this kind of, kind of nonsense. It's really just judging somebody based on a few pictures of them. And so there's no swiping involved in Candid Dating. What they do is kind of these live events where you can meet 7 different Catholics for 7 minutes each. And at the end, you simply decide if you want to continue the conversation or not. If you both select yes, then you'll be matched in a chat after the event to exchange as much or as little information as you'd like. There's no swiping and there's no profiles. You create a free account that only their team has access to and knows how to best match you based on your interests, your age, and things like that. You can join events with singles near you or meet singles from across the country. And so they have some local kind of events, and then they have nationwide events as well. Many will use Candid Dating as a way to get back into dating if you've been out of dating for a while, or maybe you've never really dated before. It's a great way to get some practice, meet a number of different people. You can kind of work on your conversation skills in a very low stress, low pressure environment. And their experience emphasizes seeing others and yourself as a gift, getting out of the mindset of flipping through a list of features and experiencing the human heart that is across from you. And so you can get 50% off your first event using the code EXCELLENCE as your promo code. You can visit candiddating.net to learn more. It'll also be in the show notes in the description of this episode where you can click on that. You can also find them, Candid Dating, on Instagram. All right, without further ado, let's get into today's episode. Today, I am back with the absolute love of my life, my beloved wife, Emily Crankfield.
Oh, hey.
How are we doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am living the dream. Just happy to be back here with you.
I love it.
Excited to chat. Another episode of Seeking Excellence. And especially to get into, as we like to talk about the marriage, family issues, things like that. And so today, I don't know how, spicy you plan on getting or any hot takes you plan on sharing today, but we're going to generally just kind of talk about our experience of you being a stay-at-home mom, how we made that decision,
what it's been like, some of the practicals of it, you know, and all of that. And then obviously my side of it too, and just thinking about the provider role. I was recently reading a, maybe we can kind of kick off with this, this article from NerdWallet. And so they were talking, I did a reel about this recently, but they were talking about how there's a very, very low percentage of millennials that don't have children that are planning to have children. So that number is about 25%. So it said that, 25% of millennials who don't have kids already are planning to try to have kids someday.
Wow.
Yeah, which is pretty wild. So just That's crazy. In four of the parents, it's about the same number of parents who have children that plan to have more children, just about one in four of them for millennials. And then it says, millennials who don't have kids or plan to have kids were asked why. Nearly two in five, about 40%, 38% to be exact, said it's because the overall cost of raising a child is too high.
Ooh.
And so I think that in that world, that's obviously the biggest pushback we tend to see with this topic of stay-at-home moms, right? Mm-hmm. Living on a single income. What's the thing called? Single income, countless kids, you know, or the silks.
Yeah,
single income, lots of kids instead of the dinks.
Yeah.
But we have this rise of the dinks, the dual income, no kids. And you see people that are, you know, living pretty well on that. And a lot of people are just afraid, I think, of having kids in general, then let alone you know, bring in some Catholic or more traditional thought of living on one income. And it gets pretty scary.
Yeah. I'd say, I mean, we wrestled with that for a long time too, you know, like it seemed like, well, we had always had in mind the idea of us, of me staying home, or like that was the goal.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, like, especially once we got married and everything like that, which we can probably get to your kind of conversion to wanting this, which I feel like would be an interesting thing to talk about.
For sure.
Something I've wanted my whole life, just because that's what my mom was, a stay-at-home mom, and that's just what I knew, and that's all I've ever wanted to be. I remember somebody one time asking me, like, I was leaving the Culture Project, I was a missionary at the Culture Project, and they were asking me, like, I was trying to figure out what to do next, and they were like, well, what do you want to do, like, with your life? And I was like, I just want to be a mom. They were like, like, you came into my life like probably a month after that conversation, or two months after that conversation, which is funny. But it did seem out of reach financially for a while. Or just like, you had set some like benchmarks, since Nathan is in charge of the finances,
the CFO of the family.
I don't want that to sound like, oh, he like held me to these benchmarks or whatever. Like, we didn't come up with them together, but Nathan is the financial expert of the family.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's heavy
Nathan
praise.
Makes literal PowerPoints for our monthly budgets.
This is true.
Full of gifts, full of all that kind of stuff. It's
make
really
it
fun.
Entertaining.
Yeah, he makes it entertaining.
Yeah,
but
it's kind of like the Michael Scott explained to me, like, you, like, I'm five.
Yeah, but you make it like it's like fun to you. You know,
it is
the financial component of stuff.
So oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's very exciting.
So the beginning of
strategizing,
this,
planning, all that stuff.
Right. Once I left the Archdiocese of Denver, one of the things that Nathan gave me was like a PowerPoint presentation on my retirement plan, is what we called it.
That's right.
And it had all these financial benchmarks that just, they were, in some senses, if we had stuck with those kind of financial benchmarks, we would have, I don't know how many years you would think that it would have been for me to keep working.
Yeah, probably a year and a half would be my guess.
A year and a half, still just like a little bit longer and stuff. And then through personal discernment and like prayer and just kind of different things in the last couple of months, we just kind of decided to jump all in and surrender it to the Lord. You know, that's kind of like been the journey to where I am now.
Right.
I guess because I'm going to be stepping away from even my part-time work in like 2 weeks, 3 weeks or something like that. So, so it's been an interesting journey. What was your like initial question with that? I was just kind of thinking of like where, how we've gotten to this point.
Yeah, I didn't even ask one, I don't think, but I think my question that came up, the one that came up while you were saying that, is just kind of taking it back to how did your mom, you know, being a stay-at-home mom, influence your decision to want to be a stay-at-home mom?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. It's kind of interesting now. There's so much that like now being a mom, you almost think backwards to like my mom doing those things, you know? And there's so much that's like that happens when you're not aware of it, you know?
Yeah.
like Jordan doesn't realize everything I do for him every day, but it's almost like now, see, I'm going to get emotional.
Only like 5 minutes. We're getting started.
I'm already getting emotional.
The waterworks.
But
let it flow. This is a safe space. You're free to feel your feelings here.
But it's interesting now, me pouring out so much to him, I realize how much my mom did that for us and was like,
yeah.
You know, like you start to like have this like new admiration and recognition of what your mom did and all that kind of stuff and everything that she, yeah, all the ways she served you for those years. And so I truly believe that a lot of it was just like, I mean, like things I didn't even like comprehend, you know, but I just like knew that like her being there all the time was a net positive in my life, right? Like that, like we have the best memories of like she would take us to the zoo like every week. We had, you know, memberships to the zoo and the museum and different things like that, you know, when we weren't in school, whether it was during the summers or before we were in school or anything like that. And yeah, we just got to like do things with her and be with her. And I think now in hindsight, I recognize how much it meant, if that makes sense. And I kind of just feel like it was like natural for me to want the same thing because it was so good for me and my siblings growing up, you know? And yeah, I just loved, we were in school, we weren't homeschooled, but she was like always at school with us too. She was like always volunteering. We had these reading things in the hallways at school where they would like pull you out one by one to like test your reading and stuff. And she was always the one running that for the class or, you know, bringing food for the teachers. And I just like saw that a lot. And that's what I wanted to do as well, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know if it was ever a conscious thing of just, but more just like experiencing it for my whole life. It was like, that's what I wanted to, you know, just wanted to be with my babies.
Just made it very, very clear to you.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And then, when you were going through like college and things like that, how did you ever have any moments of changing, you know, when you're working in DC, like, did you ever have any temptations to say, maybe I do want to pursue a career?
Yeah. I would say DC was probably the biggest one there because I studied theology and youth ministry. And so I always like kind of envisioned myself like working for a church or working for a Catholic school and like my kids still going to school or something like that, you know, the kind of maybe being a part of that, or like just volunteering, I guess, maybe if I wasn't working full time, being able to volunteer.
Right.
But then, yeah, I worked in Washington, D.C. for one summer as an intern in college, and the whole life really pulls you in, you know?
Oh, I'm sure.
Like it's intensive. So fun.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, but I do think that.
Yeah. And exciting. I think anytime you get those kind of unique behind the scenes experiences, exclusive experiences, it's hard to decline that. It's hard to not be attracted to that.
For sure. And just like the like glitz and glam of it all and being around important people and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
I will say though, because this second example just came to mind. I feel like the Lord has always kind of blessed me with just like a healthy recognition of how certain things like that would take away from my dream of being with my family or with my kids. Mm. Like for example, growing up, fun fact, I wanted to be a sports reporter, I wanted to be a specifically the sideline, like girls that are at baseball games, like following around the team and everything. It was really interesting because my, through a long story, we got really close with the actual like TV reporter for the Rockies at that time, who was like my idol. And I just like loved her so much, you know? And, now this is bringing up to mind, like I had this very pivotal moment, like maybe in middle school or high school. I don't even think it was in high school even, like I was pretty young, where it just like hit me that she like never had kids. She was married. She's now divorced. And she just like had never had kids and was like always working. And I had always said I wanted a lot of kids and whatnot. And it just like this moment of like, it hit me that you couldn't do both kind of thing. You might not be able to do both.
Yeah. Very unlikely.
Very unlikely. And it was kind of like, I just kind of was like, oh yeah, so I'm not going to become a reporter. Yeah. I just like, it was really interesting. Cause I remember like, it was funny story, but she was like, there was during student council in high school, there was a day where you're supposed to dress like your dream occupation. Mm. And I was on student council. So I was sharing it on my Facebook and she comment and was like, can't wait to see what you're gonna wear, because she still like thought that I wanted to be a reporter. Yeah. Like it was still like, you know, like it was still like pretty current and stuff, and I was like old enough to put it on Facebook, and I remember being like, oh, I don't know what to tell her that I'm not.
What'd you wear?
I think I dressed as a teacher because I had changed my mind at that point that I didn't want to be a reporter anymore. Because I was in high school. That's now, and really I had already funny. Made like come to this realization that like, oh, I can't be that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then same
doesn't
thing.
Line up.
Yeah. Same thing when I was working in Washington, D.C. is there was a lady in our office, similar kind of story, that she just like was a slave to the job in a sense. And yeah. I just saw that. And she's now left and had a baby and gotten married, had a baby and everything like that, which is really cool to see, you know, still through Facebook. But watching her kind of go through it, it was just like, okay, this is not the lifestyle that I want, and it's not gonna align with the goals that I have for my life, you know, and being a mom. So yeah, it's kind of funny. It wasn't even DC. Once I started talking about that, I was like, oh, it was being the Rockies like sideline reporter that it just like clicked for me that you can't do this if you want to have kids and you want to do that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah,
very interesting. And so, you know, leaving, I obviously getting out of college, culture project, anytime post-college, did you have any doubts or question marks around it?
I mean, I guess when I wasn't dating anybody, you know,
yeah,
you know, like in college or like that year after college, I guess.
Then you're like, what do I do forever?
Yeah. Cause I remember, this is really funny. The person who asked me what I wanted to do and I said, I just want to be a mom. They were like, well, you can't really just like do that. You know,
yeah.
I mean, like there's some like steps in between there
for sure.
And everything, which is funny because it was Lucas, who's one of your best friends.
He was a groomsman.
He was the one that I was like talking to about all of this. Yeah. It was before I'd ever met Nathan. I still remember that phone call and just being like, yeah, I know, but that's all I want. So we'll figure out a way to get there.
At some point. Hopefully, but God will provide the means.
Yeah. But I don't know. The more personally I got into the workforce, the more it just like became evident to me that this is, what I wanted. And I wrestle with that sometimes because I know that it's not as natural to some women too. And so I feel like I don't want to just like sound like, oh, everybody should do this because it comes naturally to me, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like I want to give that caveat. It's like I understand and I have plenty of friends and people in my life that don't feel that way. And I really empathize with that right now just because being a mom is so hard. And like, and I only have a 1-year-old or like almost 1-year-old, you know, like there are many days where I'm like, I kind of wish I was just in an office and he was, you know, with a daycare with our moms or something like that. You know, there are many days where I'm just like break down and I'm like, I'd rather be in an office right now, you know? And so I understand how that can happen. But overall, I haven't looked back on it at all for sure.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting.
It is. How much of do you think, and obviously this is just totally speculation, but what percentage of either women out there, even you, like what percentage of do you think the capacity or the tendency or the leaning towards being a stay-at-home mom is natural, like kind of a nature versus nurture question?
Interesting.
How much do you think is that like societally driven, your family experience, or just kind of God-given natural? It's always a dangerous question.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, purely on like empirical data, I guess, of like my friends or people I'm around and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That have become moms or different things. Actually, no, because now I think about people that contradict a lot of like there's a few people that contradict that. But I do feel like the ones who had it growing up are the ones that are like feel more inclined to it, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Or the ones whose families did. You know, or parents both worked or whatever, feel more inclined to do that as well. There's definitely, that's not like a rule for sure. Like in my friends or anything like that, like I've seen people break that on both sides, you know?
Yeah.
One of my friends is a stay-at-home mom and her mom worked, and one, you know, one's mom was a stay-at-home mom and now she wants to work, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting because I kind of wonder like how much, some of that like woundedness there or like if like it wasn't handled well in either way can like wound you to the opposite, if that makes sense, which I've seen. So yeah, I don't know if there's a way to like give a percentage. What would you say?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a very good point that anything can become toxic
True.
In a sense,
yeah.
right? Like there's we often talk about ideals. I get a lot of crap whenever I talk about the ideal family structure, the ideal family setup, and it's like anything can become bad.
Right.
And a lot of times people will use those exceptions when the ideal is played out, but played out poorly or in a toxic manner. And they'll say, see, this is why it doesn't work for everyone. And it's like, well, there's some other things that are missing there, right? Which are pretty fundamental to it being successful and it thriving in the way that it's supposed to. So I think that's big. I think for a lot of the women that I've talked to that seem to be anti it, I think that there's a capacity thing.
Yeah.
I am of the belief, I probably have a hotter stance on it, that I think that all women are called to be, well, I think, and to go back, you know, and maybe I'll even pull it up here in a second. The Catechism of the Council of Trent, which my theologian friend, Waylon, who will be a podcast guest here shortly. Oh, Waylon is an absolute character.
Waylon is a character.
Total opposites. He's one of my favorite dudes in the world.
It's gonna be more true.
It's gonna be a great and very long episode with Waylon. But we were talking about this because it kind of goes into the Ephesians 5 stuff that I get a lot of flack for. And the thing that I'm pulling from is the Catechism of the Council of Trent, which Waylon said is the unlike our current catechism, is actually like closer to dogma. Like it's more like the teachings in it are pretty fundamental to what we believe as Catholics. And in that, they have some very strict and, you know, straightforward guidance for marriages and for the husband and for the wife. There's a paragraph dedicated to each. It really reinforces Ephesians 5, but then it gets into what I think is the best way to handle it, which is not to say, well, look at what the woman has to do. Look at what the man has to do. It gets into, and the other thing I think is really important about the Catechism of the Council of Trent is I can't remember, I know it was overseen by St. Charles Borromeo, is my belief. And then maybe I need to look this up so I can confirm it. But there's another saint that basically like actually did the writing of it. But it was like two saints, two canonized saints that did this, right? It was not just like some random people. But I love that they break it down into the paragraphs that specifically hit on what a husband is supposed to do, what a wife is supposed to
do. Yeah, you should look it up.
All right, I'm looking it up real quick.
I think that's really interesting. And with that, like we had heard some hot takes. If anybody follows me on Instagram, they know that I love the series of books that I got for Christmas called the Summa Domestica.
Yes.
And in it, she does, like, I remember somebody, when they saw that I got that, gave the caveat of being like, oh, she has some hot takes. And I was like, oh, what's her hot take? And that person said, oh, she just believes that, like, even if it's a financial burden to your family, the mom should stay home, kind of thing.
Yep.
And that she, like, she does kind of flat out say that in the book. But she gives practicals of how to, you know, what then is your role as the stay-at-home mom and wife to, you know, be frugal with your spending, especially with grocery spending, and learn how to garden, learn how to, you know, hang your clothes on the line instead of using like the dryers, like one of the things, you know, save electricity, all that kind of stuff, and like all that goes into it. So she doesn't just like say it and then leave it out there. It was really interesting how I was reading that right around the time that we were really wrestling with this of like diving in without the financial cushion that we felt like we needed to have, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that she, that kind of encouraged me in that. And I literally messaged her on Instagram just to thank her for that once we had finally made the decision. Because it was, I think, her boldness and her just like directness. And then also being like, here's how you can make it work. Here's how you can like decide, you know, and there might be some cuts that you have to make. But yeah. Did you find it?
Yes. So I got my stuff here. So, and I'll finish my thought that I was going to with this. So, written under the supervision of St. Charles Borromeo and promulgated by St. Pius V in 1566, was the most comprehensive and authoritative statement of Catholic doctrine ever published at the time. What I was getting at is I think that what they wrote here for the chief duties of the husband and chief duties of the wife are still valid. And so I don't think that there's really every good reason, except for like extreme need, for a wife to work like a full-blown career, especially once they have children outside of the home. I'm talking like 40 to 50 hours a week, traveling frequently, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
To me, that's where you get where it's almost undeniably problematic.
Yeah.
And I think, why is that? I think it's because of what they say are the duties of a wife, what's meant to be the wife's chief priority. Now, I'm going to read parts of both of them. They're kind of long, but we'll link to them and everything here in at the end. But I just want to get on here. It leads with the duties of a husband. So again, like, why I think this is so good is because it lays out both sides instead of like, you know, if you listen to my Ephesians 5 podcast, yeah, it's always like, well, you only, ladies, you only have to submit if he's doing this and whatever. It's like, my whole thing is, why don't we at men's and women's conferences, marriage conferences, talk about both? Sure. But men's conferences, women's conferences, how about the men? I try to teach men how to do the husband thing. Yeah. You try to teach women how to do the women's thing.
Yeah.
And we just do that. And there's no like subjectivity of, well, if he's doing this, then you do that. Now, obviously, when it comes to stay-at-home mom, the husband does need to be doing his part, which we're going to get to in order for you to do yours, right?
Exactly.
All right. So it says here, it is the duty of the husband to treat his wife courteously and with honor. Herein it should be recollected that Eve was called by Adam his companion. The woman, says he, whom thou gavest me as a companion. And hence it was, in the opinion of some of the fathers, that she was not formed from the feet or from the side of, or from the head, but from the side of man. It is also becoming of the husband that he be constantly occupied in the exercise of some honest pursuit, with a view as well to provide the necessities for the sustenance of his family, as to avoid the languor of idleness from which almost every vice flows. He is also to keep his family in order, to correct their morals, and keep them steadfast in their respective employments. And so that's really big, that's right? Really, and St. John Chrysostom says the same thing, that the head is meant to provide for the members of the body, right? That is his chief responsibility. And obviously you have morals and other things when it comes to leading the family, but that is really, really key there, that that's one of the main roles of a husband. Yeah. And I think that whenever that gets neglected, it's really problematic.
For sure.
I actually, this is kind of random too, but earlier today I took a screenshot of this, she's like an Instagram, like, growth expert kind of person on Instagram. And she was like, Instagram seems to be a highlight reel. I know I'm jumping all over the place, but I swear I'm tying it together. She's like, Instagram seems to be a highlight reel, so here are some things that I struggle with. And like the third slide said, at times I struggle with being the sole income provider for my family, in which my only role was being a mom. There's a lot of pressure to continue to make my business work, and sometimes it takes the enjoyment out of running a business. And to me, when you have secular people pointing that out, like, that's, it's kind of like the birth control thing. It's like, yes, you're not meant, you're not built for that.
Right.
It doesn't mean you can't do it. She can. She makes a ton of money. She's posted sometimes of like the months she's had.
Yeah.
She's capable of it. She's deeply unhappy.
Yeah.
I would venture to guess her stay-at-home dad husband is also deeply unhappy. Getting to the duties of a wife, bringing it home.
Bring it home.
The duties of a wife, let wives be subject to their husbands, getting into all that stuff. Be focus on adorning yourself with interior beauty, not just the outward beauty. But then it gets into, it should also be the principal study of theirs to train up their children in the practice of religion and to take particular care of their domestic concerns. Unless compelled by necessity to go abroad, they should willingly keep themselves at home.
Interesting.
Unless compelled by necessity to go out, they should be willingly able to keep themselves at home, and they should never venture to leave home without the permission of their husbands. Which that gets into some pretty sketchy territory as far as feminists today, but we'll ignore that part. Their chief, responsibility is the things of the home and teaching their children religion. Now, what I think is really important there, what I've often blamed, you know, the generations before us for the situation we find ourselves in now. Me and Isabel Brown were talking about this recently, of like, you know, our parents and our grandparents' generation constantly complain about Gen Z and millennials, but it's like, you raised us and you created the environment and the society and this messed up culture we live in that's created the mess that is Gen Z and millennials, if there is such a thing. To have the religious situation we have now, men and women, kids, like the disaffiliation, all of that stuff. If you are going to be a working mom, I would be, based on that and what I think the church has reiterated throughout the years, so you can go into many other things. This isn't going to be, you know, there's podcasts for that. If you work a career throughout your life and your kids grow up and they are not practicing the faith, I would not feel great about my final moments.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, seriously. And I'm not saying that to be light. I'm not saying that to be aggressive. I'm not saying that to be rude. I'm very, very passionate about people going to heaven, right? And so I spend a lot of time thinking about what gets people to heaven. I think I spend a lot of time thinking about what prevents people from going to heaven. I'm not saying that you're damned and going to hell if your kids don't go to mass anymore and you're an adult.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, as a person who's thinking about it now, I don't think there's a lot of value in retroactively thinking back. And, you know, if I'm a 6-year-old mom listening to this, like, you don't have the information. That's, you know, God is merciful. God understands. I think that we have a responsibility to teach people what is the role of husbands, wives, what is the role of fathers, mothers. And we have a responsibility. We're not just like, you know, ignorance. We're still culpable in some of our ignorance, right? Yeah. If I'm going to voluntarily become a father and husband, a mother and a wife, then I have some responsibility to know what the hell I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
What does that look like? Yeah. God created this. Obviously, there's a plan. I have responsibilities in this. What are they?
Yeah.
Are our responsibilities different? Yes, we're both supposed to pass on the faith, but you see here, the saints are saying that your primary responsibility is teaching our religion, our faith to the children. I model it out and live it out. And if I don't do that, I'm also held very culpable, obviously. Right. And we know the stats on that, that like your work might be spurned by me not living it out well.
Right.
But at least you know if you've made, even if you're working, your primary responsibility, the things of your home, which I think almost forces you into at least part-time work, or at least a career that is not going to be dominating your life. If you give your all and you prioritize passing on the faith to your children, the formation of your children, and they choose to grow up and reject the faith anyways, so be it.
Yeah.
You can't control what they do.
Yeah.
But I think you get yourself into a precarious and tricky situation when women are like, I'm going to pursue a career, and like not discern about it, not pray about it, not be open to staying home. Just full blown out. I'm going to do this because it makes me happy. We don't need the money, but it makes me fulfilled.
Yeah.
And then they grow up and their kids don't practice the faith anymore. I think that is not good.
No.
For eternity.
Definitely not. Yeah.
That's a lot.
There's a lot there.
But yeah, I did end up bringing it home, right? You brought it all together. Hey, let's go. As you always do. Thank you. She's so kind.
Interesting. What I was thinking about was, I wish I could have found this stat somewhere today, but I've heard this like thrown around a lot, that there's like a large percentage of women who were like, when asked, were felt angry at their husbands for not making enough money. Do you remember that stat? I feel like I've seen it on a few reels recently.
I don't. Yeah. But or, like, I mean, I remember the idea. But
the idea of like this idea, and that kind of goes like back to the secular thing. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's like the same kind of like secular thing with that. But I do think that, you know, you bring in like the teaching of the faith. I think of like with Jordan, even just like when I'm with him in the home right now, he's like just starting to say Jesus, right? Whenever he sees like a crucifix. And it's because for like a week, every time we would pass a crucifix, I would say, hey, Jesus,
or there's several in that
good night, Jesus, or something like that. Right. And so he's like throughout his day hearing, you know, the name Jesus, or like, especially now that I've like cut back from work, I can take him to daily mass more. And so we've been like going to daily mass more. And I feel like once I was able
to listen to Hallow,
we listen to Hallow while we're doing breakfast. We're doing that kind of stuff. And so it's me, like, that's how I live out my spiritual life right now. And it's just like, he's a part of it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not me. I was thinking about if I was still working at the Archdiocese, like I would still get to go to like I would still get to pray at mass, you know, that noon mass, and just like be by myself and like enjoy mass and all that kind of stuff. But like now I like wrestle him in the back, you know, at 8 a.m. mass, but that's like where he should be. Where else would he be if I wasn't bringing him there?
And think about the vast majority of working moms we're talking about, I would imagine, are not working at the Archdiocese.
Yeah, exactly.
So there is no you know what I mean? Like, so there, even the things you're doing that are distracted throughout the day of going to daily mass, of listening to Hallow while you eat breakfast at 9 a.m. or whatever.
Yeah.
Like that opportunity is gone for most moms that choose to
Absolutely. Be outside. Yeah. And so it's just like, it's just really interesting how I wonder if he would have caught on to it as much if it was only, if I only had like certain times of day with him, you know, and like, obviously we, you know, go and kiss the cross before we go to bed, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But I do just feel like it's just like, it's all of our life right now, you know, and I'm just trying to teach him that through those little things.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you want to talk about, like, as we're talking about all of this, kind of your conversion to it? Because you didn't really initially ever think that you'd have a stay-at-home
wife. Yeah, it's very true.
Do you want to talk about that?
So, I mean, so most of the women that I dated previously were like very professionally driven, you know, nurses, CPAs, like things like that. And so I just never, I mean, my mom worked my mom worked above and beyond, right? Like she worked a lot of weekends and evenings and things like that. And she did that so I could go to private school, and we wouldn't be here where we are today without it. So very grateful for, yeah. Shout out to Sandy.
Shout out to Sandy. Thank you.
For sure.
Thank you for that sacrifice.
Yeah. Huge. And so, so just growing up, like that was just kind of my thought of like, I mean, it's just funny to me. I can think back to a lot of, and I have it written down even in my notes, some places of like goals and things that I had to, you know, make income eventually that is now 2/3 of what I make, you know?
Yeah.
And so like, it's just kind of, it's wild to just think back to that. But I think with those kind of lower goals that I had too, it was kind of just like, well, something like we had to have two jobs, and that was to, you know, have the 2 to 3 kids that I thought I was going to have back then. I think I always wanted to have at least like post college, I always wanted to have at least 3, because I always thought that like 2 children was like two only children.
Right.
Yeah. And I just saw that so much growing up, where there was just like this constant, I got the balloons going on the video. I don't know what I did for the balloons, but yeah. So I just thought that was always a problem. So I always wanted to have at least 3 kids, but I always thought, yeah, both parents working and yeah, just kind of the normal life. And then you and I met and we talked about it. And I think this is a good segue into some of the practicals about it, because it's also a very practical issue and topic. While there's a lot of trust, I think there's also a lot of practicalities that need to happen. Yeah, I think for me, it was just kind of seeing it. Obviously, seeing the fruit in your life of your mom being there, but then also seeing a lot of the other, to me, it kind of goes hand in hand with the homeschool experience of just seeing like the stay-at-home mom homeschooling, because I think I was almost more sold on homeschooling after meeting like normal, great Catholic homeschool families and being like, you can't have homeschool family without a stay-at-home mom.
Yeah.
You have to have both.
It's and hard I think to I was, describe the like community that we have here that I grew up in.
Yeah.
Where it just
Despite
not being homeschool, yeah. I grew up around a lot of families like that made me want it someday. And I feel like that also made me want the like stay-at-home mom experience, because that's just what I saw. I just saw a lot of that.
Yeah.
And I understand a lot of people don't see a lot of that, you know? And I remember when we were moving back to Colorado, I was like so excited for you just to like experience that. And it was crazy how quickly after Nathan started experiencing it and seeing like the fruit of some of these families and the kids and just like the way that they interact with people. Yeah. I feel like a lot of that especially led to your like just experiencing it, you know, after not having.
And I think with those things, a lot of times too, it's just like percentages. Right. So it's like, and all of us want this. We all want what's best for our kids. And I think for those of us who are practicing the faith that have like a serious conversion, that we truly want our kids to live out the Catholic faith. That is the utmost important thing. Even what was I listening to today that they were talking about this? It wasn't Elon Musk. It was somebody like that, like some like really successful person. Or no. It was Beardy Brandon Turner from Bigger Pockets. Sorry, it took me a second. My favorite real estate podcast. He used to be on it. Now he's kind of not. He's kind of come back, but he's like super, super rich Christian guy. And he was talking about how like he goes to school for his kids, and they're like, "Yeah, your kids are doing well in math and reading and all this stuff." And his point was like, none of that matters. I want to know, how are they sharing with other kids? How are they treating their teachers? Mm-hmm. Are they being respectful? He's like, the other stuff will come.
Yeah.
Right. Which is like very entrepreneurial, because we like don't think that like grades are that important.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of bought into that mindset, because I just think that, you know, we've kind of joked about that before too, right? Like your grade point average was probably 30% higher than mine. And even if you were totally unleashed into the job market, I think that I would still always make more money than you probably. Yeah. And just like financial acumen and things like that. Yeah.
You're more of a go-getter.
Unleashed for 30 years, I'd have a higher net worth.
Yeah. Like the entrepreneurial
starting at the same spot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. For sure.
And
you have way more of that.
Yeah. And I think that you have that kind of feeling and experience. And he was reacting to a story of another guy on a slander. I didn't super look into it, but a guy who I listen to sometimes that was caught like with like having an affair with like 6 women. Really popular in like that same kind of space of like go-getters and all that kind of stuff. It's pretty sad. But he was talking about that, about how like character really matters. Even if you're successful, like you have to have good character and be strong. And so for us as Catholics, when we want to raise saints, it's like, what is the most likely path for that for my children? Mm-hmm. You know, thinking back to, again, like when we're counseling young women of, do you want to marry somebody that's not Catholic or not practicing the faith or whatever? It's like, well, what is the best likelihood? Now, if you get it down to the wire and you have to make some decisions, right? You don't get the perfect person all the time, and you still try to do what's best, but you want to work with the best thing that you can do, right? And just kind of like, it's kind of with all this success stuff, you know, like these kind of people, it's like this optimization. You can overdo that, but you still kind of want to generally speak, think about what's best. And for me, once I met these families, I realized, okay, seems to me like homeschooling is the best route. Coming from a Catholic education background where I went K through college, same. In Catholic universities, yeah, and or Catholic schooling, and seeing all the people who fell away from the faith, it's like, yeah, I can't have that. I don't want.
It's not
the,
for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and homeschooling is not for sure either, yeah. But it's kind of like
the percentages
feel similar to the percentages you get in like the trad statistics, right? Where they'll be like, yeah, 98% of trads are against contraception and only 30% of right. Novus Ordo people. And like, we can sense. Get into like the skewing of that, but I think it's probably similar to like the results of Catholic homeschool families to Catholic definitely school. Catholic public school families, but yeah. Then you have Catholic, even Catholic school families that I would bet that the numbers that leave being pro-life, being against contraception, waiting till marriage, like they have to just be night and day.
So different. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I was convinced, I think my conversion was actually first to homeschooling.
Interesting.
And stay-at-home motherhood was kind of like a necessity to that.
Yeah.
And then as it was, honestly, despite your initial aversion to me diving into the Ephesians 5 thing, that was what actually was my deeper conversion to being like, oh, this is understanding this, right? Yeah. Understanding the catechism, understanding church teaching, understanding what the saints have said. Maybe not, you know, our most recent catechism or like Catholicism in the last 20 years advocating for it the same way. But Catholicism throughout the ages has advocated that the husband's role is to provide, going back to St. John Chrysostom and, you know, the first 500 years of Christianity, that the husband's role is to provide and to lead and to care for and protect. The woman's role is to love, respect, and take care of the things of the home and the formation of the children.
Yeah.
And I was like, that seems right.
Yeah.
You know, far be it for me to argue with St. John Chrysostom. Amen. That's amen. My dude.
As you're talking about this, I would love to hear your thoughts, because I just feel like I would often say, like, in our first, like, these first 2 years now, it's been 2 years since we got married.
Yeah.
Happy marriage. Anniversary. Hey, happy anniversary. 2 years of marriage, but even, like, when we were engaged and you were living in the apartment that I moved into and we got mm-hmm. married. And there was oftentimes, like, you know, I came over for dinner almost every night just because it was right by my office. You know, yeah. Wanted to hang out together. We were getting stuff ready for the wedding and everything. And I just remember for these, like, I guess 3 years now, just feeling this, like, tension. And it seemed like oftentimes that the biggest fights we would get in were when things were, like, when balls were dropped. Or some of the biggest fights were when maybe I dropped balls that were like of the home, if that makes sense. While I felt like I was still having to like be in an office and like do all these things, and that I did just want really to be in the home, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I felt like there was always this tension, and I remember I kept just saying to you like, oh, like once I'm not fully working or once I'm not, you know, all this kind of stuff. And while, you know, things aren't perfect, I do feel like a lot of some of those tensions have like, you know, simmered down now that I've been able to like do some of those things more, you know what I mean? Like whether it was like chores or things that got dropped or, and not necessarily like you just getting mad at me for it not happening, but it being like, let's like all just like do it kind of thing. You know, like it just felt like there was just like, just a murkiness of roles when I was like still working full time.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I will say the one exception, I think, to the improvements is it took about 3 months to get the pretzel crisps. But other than that,
you're nuts.
Other than that, I would say it got a lot better, but the pretzel crisp thing, it still hurts.
I forgot the pretzel crisps. You stink.
It just took a long time.
Pretzel crisps, and I totally forgot about it.
Took a long time to get them. You know?
Oh my gosh.
But other than that, I would agree. It's been pretty much perfect.
But you know what I mean? Is like, I just felt like there's this tension for so long, and it was like, it was just like, because we were like, I was trying to do both sides.
Well, the reversal, we also talked about that, the experience of me being home.
Ah, that was the other thing.
To the office.
Yes, he was at home working from like a home office, and I was at the office, so I was leaving every day. And in my mind, I'm like, well, why can't you just like clean up after yourself, like during lunch, and like come home to this mess or like all this kind of stuff? Because it's more of like my mind that I can like do those things, you know, as I go or whatever.
Yeah.
And, like, and he was like probably working much harder, but like was in at home, you know?
Yeah.
So he didn't have time, but in my mind, I think he do, you know, it was just like, it was kind of a weird dynamic. I would say the first step of it getting better is when you, like, right before Jordan was born, because we turned his nursery, your office, into his nursery. So you started coming to, like, your office.
Yeah.
And that was, like, the first step, kind of, where we were both leaving the house, you know?
Yeah.
I do think some things were, like, tense during that time because we were, like, still trying to figure out things at home, you know, while nobody was, like,
nobody was there
physically there, you know, with the dog or whatever. But yeah, I feel like that was, like, the first stepping point to like feeling better, and then I could only imagine.
Started to leave and you started to
and
stay.
Then I started to stay, and then I pulled back, did part time,
right?
And then now I can only imagine in the next few months, because I still feel like honestly, that was like the tipping point to make us jump, which I guess we could get to now. Of like,
well, I want to address some things there
for sure.
I think it is always difficult because I think a lot of times women take the natural, I think naturally kind of have the inclination to want to do more of the things of the home.
Yeah.
And that was kind of my mom's experience, right? Both my parents worked. My dad definitely worked more hours even when my mom was working overtime, because he worked literally like 14 to 16 hours a day. It was wild. But she still like did most of the cooking. He did some.
Yeah.
She did most of the cleaning. He did little of the cleaning. They definitely split more of the cooking. She did all of the laundry from what I recall. And so you have that, right? Yeah. So you have that, this place where typically the woman still kind of does a lot of the womanly things, the things
household
of the home.
Things, yeah.
Yeah. The domestic things. And so that was kind of like our beef, I feel like, to an extent, was like, well, these are still kind of like more your realm. Then you throw in on top of that, where like your job was in a sense almost more demanding. I was going to say minus we have to travel, but you still had like more nights away working in youth ministry for the Archdiocese.
Like weird hours demanding kind
of.
Yeah.
But it was still very stressful, or like, you know, took a lot out of you. But like in order for us to even live in that apartment, let alone buy a house, I had to make twice as much as you were making.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. And so like I'm home all day, but there's like these home tasks that need done. And you're like, why can't you do these? You're home all day. Almost seeming like I'm not working, but I'm like, this career is like our future.
Yeah.
You know? And so you just, there's so many factors that get thrown in. Yeah. And so you think about that, where whether the mom's taking more of the at-home responsibility, but she also makes more than the husband, or vice versa, right? Where the husband's making more of the money, but she's also working for her passion. But, you know, it's like, how much do you value that? That's something that I felt like was always difficult for us. It's like, is both of us working 8 hours a day, is it weighted the same for the family?
Yeah.
If I'm making twice as much or making more, even, let's say it's 50% more, than you are, or vice versa, right? Yeah. If the woman's making more than the husband, it's like, how do we split up the house chores still the same because you're working different times? Yeah, you know what I mean?
Really,
it's like,
interesting.
It gets difficult what it felt like. To it be like, how do you value it? You know,
it just felt like off,
right?
You know, like I just like felt like we were off during that time. Like it just didn't feel, or it was just unnatural. It felt to me, you know, like that we were just like, and then it was often the cause of a lot of our tension or, you know, arguments and different things like that was, you know, all of that stuff.
The pretzel crisps.
Crazy. But
I got to drop something.
And I do
want to
speak. I do
like want to
speak to
mind,
that though, is because,
you know,
I feel like this has been,
you just don't
this
see
has been
coming.
Said to me before.
Yeah.
Of a fear of being home, of being like, oh, all those like chores or all these other things are going to fall on me.
Yeah.
Or just the child, like all the baby stuff is going to fall on me. Yeah, I don't want to stay home because I don't want those things. But it's like, if your husband is out bringing home, you know, the money to provide and everything like that, then what is your job? Like, what else would you do if you weren't doing those things to like help support the family dynamic, you know, and to help support the like, what's going on in the house? Like, if you aren't doing those things, what else are you doing during that time? And I think that's maybe if people do like see it in that way, like I just see it as like my work, you know?
Right.
In some sense,
everybody's like, called to work.
Yeah. It is my work. Like, it's my job.
I think there's been this, there's an interesting movement similar to the Dinks, like the dual income, no kids.
Yeah.
I feel like women that I got into this long debate with a feminist under a post that was kind of talking about this. This woman wanted to be like a trophy wife or a stay at home wife. And not like in like the religious sense of like really trying to like take,
like,
but just like, I just get to live. Like I get to retire
to like
at 31.
Like lunch and
And just like
whatever.
Brunch and get your nails done and like have fun all the time. And it's like, nobody really gets to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, you're really, really, really attractive women that marry 60-year-old men, okay. They get to do it.
I was wondering where you're going.
You know, like yeah. there's a place for it in yeah, the yeah. world. But not a like, role that most want. But I also feel
like that's like, that would just be
but
like.
But it's very
like,
uncommon and it'd be very unfulfilling.
That's what I mean, unfulfilling.
Like, yeah, it would it's just fun for like a year.
Yeah, I'm sure it would be for a little bit.
But. Yeah, Candace Owens kind of talked about that in the recent podcast I listened to her. Talking about her experience on the Whatever podcast and talking to, she actually shared a personal story where she had a friend who she ended up partying with like Wyclef Jean and her friend dropped out of school and like stayed with rappers in Miami basically for like a year and then was like 3 years later like thrown aside and
wow.
10 years later Candace sees her while she's traveling and like has a family and all this stuff and working and you know crushing it and this woman was a receptionist at a hotel. And she kind of talks about how, like, it came full circle. Like, she lived the dream for, like, 2 years, didn't work.
Yeah.
All her bills are paid for, given a car, all that stuff. And then, like, once they're done with you kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, like, I feel like that's kind of the mindset, even of, like, the OnlyFans generation of women, right? It's just, like, why just want to, like, have a lot of money and not do anything? And you have men that kind of have that same perspective, and it's just not healthy for anybody to think that.
It just leads to like greater depression.
But I want to know your question about the or your opinion on the picking up after your husband things. I have an opinion on this as well. I'll share afterwards. But do you kind of know what I mean? Like, there's this kind of question about, or I feel like women complain about if they're staying at home, like, or even women that like don't stay at home, of just like cleaning up after their husband. Yeah.
Interesting.
Shoes are in the.
Shoes are all over the house. Room. I think that for this example, I guess shoes all over the house. If things get absurd or like are really bothering you, like you have like a place to like say something to you about it, obviously. Or like for me, for example, I was like, let's come up with a solution. Like another, like we'll find a place to put all of your shoes. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And then like ask you to like respect that kind of thing,
which is always a good question to ask yourself when you're repeatedly frustrated with something, to just say like, is how can we institute a system or is something missing that would actually be the simple fix to this
and just help out, and
maybe this person just isn't being malicious,
right? I think that's my biggest thing that I try to think of when I like, I am very like tidy and I like everything to be in its place kind of thing, you know, and
maybe excessively at times depending on who you ask.
But so to me, like even if you like leave your like toothpaste just like on the sink, like I like put everything away, like I just do it kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's just like my like way of going.
It drives me nuts, but
I know. I can tell.
It is nice when it's cleaned up.
We only have one. We don't have like a. If we had a dual vanity, I would let you do your thing.
I do have my side.
Yeah, if you had your
that's
side,
that's good to know.
Yeah, future.
Wow,
future house.
I'm gonna have
house.
All my stuff out.
You can do whatever you want with that.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
When I'm trying to get my big old makeup thing out and your stuff is all
in the new build
in the new build
someday definitely dual vanity. Anyways. I'm gonna have stuff everywhere. I'm gonna get
in our apartment we have
I'm gonna get extra stuff just to have it out. Oh, like, anyways, why do you have
I do think there's a sense though. I do think there's a sense.
You don't wear contacts. I just wanted more things.
You're ridiculous. I do think that there's like a sense of like, I don't want to feel like I'm your mom and that I'm like picking up after you and different things like that. But I don't really mind it that much. You know what I mean? Like you're, when you rush to leave and do stuff in the morning, or sometimes Nathan will leave like really early to go to the gym. Jordan is a very light sleeper in the mornings.
Mm.
And so he'll like set all of his stuff out the night before so that he can like go to the gym and then just like go straight to the office. And then there's sometimes like a little mess, you know, when he comes back in, but it's like you made that because you weren't trying to like put everything away and be really loud.
Yeah.
So that the baby
basically
and I get
leave
more
my
sleep.
Sleeping clothes on the couch so that I could.
Yeah. So you can like go do this, you know, whatever.
Quietly.
And to me, it doesn't really bother me that much. But I just love the mentality. You see this in like reels about motherhood and, you know, homemaking of like praying over everything, right? Like praying for the people that are going to wear the clothes you're doing laundry, like of the laundry that you're doing and everything, or like, that kind of stuff, and just trying to have like that mentality of service, I think, and just like it being my role to keep order, you know, so that it's not like chaos. And it's kind of like fun, like every probably like 30 minutes before Nathan comes home, I just like blitz the whole place, you know, like I just like, and I know that it's really funny, like you don't think of that. Like if I were coming home from somewhere, like I've seen in the past, and I've maybe gotten frustrated of like oh, like things weren't picked up before I got home kind of thing.
Sure.
You know? And so like you would probably don't even notice that I pick up before you come home. But to me, that's like a way of like loving you, because I want you to come home to like a relaxed, orderly space that you can just like rest in, because I know that's something I would like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And or just I think back to like whenever I was sick growing up, I would come home from school and, you know, my mom had totally cleaned my room. Like there was one time where I was really sick and my mom totally cleaned my room for me, and did new bed and everything like that by the time I had come home or gone to the doctors or whatever. And it just like made me feel so much better, you know? So like doing that, I feel like I don't know. I know some people probably would get mad about that, but
I think it's a good segue into the practicals of it, because one of my big things with it is it depends on what you want.
Mm.
Right. So how much do you still split the house chores or the kids when you are, when you have a stay at home wife? I think it depends on what you want lifestyle wise.
Interesting. Yeah.
I think if you're a very simple, and this isn't a thing on you, this is just generally speaking, if a woman is very simple and just wants her husband to go out and make $60,000 a year and live in a simple home and all of that, then I think great. You can probably afford to really split things and be really even.
Yeah.
I think if you want to have like a custom built dream home and go on vacations to Europe and things like that, right? Like, and you can recognize in both ways. Like maybe you say, okay, we need to make a little bit more money, or like some of those things aren't necessities, whatever.
Yeah.
Then I think the husband needs to be more freed up to be able to do that, to provide. Yeah. So what level like of providing
beyond.
Exactly. Yeah. What level of providing are they supposed to do? Now, are there some husbands that get to a point where they're making a lot of money and they don't have to work crazy hours and they abuse that a little bit and they kind of overswing in that? Yes, absolutely. But I think that there is one thing we talk about a lot, and I think as we've kind of gotten closer to being on the same page.
I was going to say, I feel like this is where my conversion has
with the practicals. I know, senses. And I can't wait to hear about it. neither can the listeners. Is you have a grind period. Everything's going to need a grind period if you're going to really get after it and get to a place where you're comfortable enough in life and you can provide for your kids if you want to pay for them to go to college. To me, that's not a non-negotiable or a necessity. I think it's a nice to have, not a need to have, but still even just giving them different experiences.
Yeah.
Like I had very fond memories of going to the beach growing up, going on family vacations. That can be very simple of just driving to the mountains or camping or something like that. But we like to go to do things. We like nicer things, and we don't live in a mansion by any means now. It's an expensive house for being in Denver.
Shout out.
But it... you know, we Airbnb the basement, and we can talk about that maybe a little bit and just kind of the story of providing. But I think that's kind of where I felt a lot. And I think, too, of how much I view the things that we do. I view the things that both of us do separately as us doing together.
Mm.
Right. So like you spend a lot more time taking care of Jordan. And I think that we are parenting and raising Jordan. Right. Because I still facilitate and provide for the things like I pay for the house. I pay for the things you guys have
emotional
or do
support during the day.
Provide emotional support throughout the day and encouragement. it's a fun role, but vice versa, like you feel part of the Hallow family and our mission, right?
Sure.
And you celebrate like a million people hit Pray 40, right? The Hallow commercial, like you're like crying watching it on TV, like because we're a part of that together. The response that we get back at a men's conference, right? A man comes up to you crying about my talk.
Yeah.
Like I'm able to do those things and be freed up to think about those things and to focus on that because of the work that we do together, right? My physique that I have or being fit, like because you clean up my clothes in the morning, like all of that contributes to those things. The podcast, when you get feedback, like you get to be a part of that in as much as you are helping me and supporting me in these little things that actually free me up to be able to do those things.
Yeah.
And I think that's also the other like mission side of it too. Now, there's some husbands that do work that makes a lot of money that is kind of not meaningless, but not as meaningful as helping people learn how to pray.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And it can still be really good. But I just think it's interesting to think about it in that capacity. And I think too much when you get into some of these women who are like, I'm not picking up after him ever, make your own lunch and stuff like that. Yeah. It's like,
I don't like that.
I don't think that's it.
Well, that's the thing is where it's like, we're on a team together, right? And it's like a holistic view of this thing that like everybody is
roles,
like,
but we're on the same team.
Everybody's like contributing something, you know?
Right.
Like, there's something there. And that's been my kind of journey recently of just being like, if there's, you know, I complain about the Airbnb or I complain about your hours or different things like that. And it's like, well, I get to be with Jordan. And that was like my all over goal, you know? And if the, we didn't right. have those things, like I wouldn't get to be with him, you know? And so in those moments when I'm like, kind of like down about those things, I just have to keep reminding myself of that. And same thing is like, you always say is like, right now we are setting up a lot of the foundations, you know, and we are yeah. doing all these things so that we can have more freedom and more time together in the future, or, you know, like have a lot of that kind of stuff set up in the future. And so there's like a grind aspect of right now. And you do like, I mean, Nathan does so much. If you could see like how much this man works, it'd be crazy, you know? Yeah, and not even just for like Hallow, but like, yeah, I mean, I'm sure you guys know, cause you see Seeking Excellence and everything, like this
yeah.
does not just come easily, you know? And this is on top of his day job. And so like, and there's a lot of other things on the side as well.
yeah.
This is not it.
All right.
So yeah, just like that's something I've been constantly reminding myself of, you know, and just like being yeah. grateful for that. And yeah, just being like, okay, how can I contribute as well, you know, and trying to learn and take things more seriously. I've been like creating budgets for the first time in my life.
Yeah.
For like activities and stuff, and like choosing things, you know, like landscaping, like doing different like landscaping and stuff, and just like there's things I want to do in the backyard that I would probably normally pay somebody to do, and I've just been like trying to do it myself during nap times mm-hmm. so that we can like save some, you know, like just all that
prioritizing
kind of stuff,
making choices,
yeah, making like choices that. Yeah, different things. And so just trying to figure out ways to support that. Yeah,
I love it.
Do you want to talk about how much time do we have? It's gotten pretty long.
Yeah, we got like one more thing.
Great. The only other thing I wanted to talk about was like kind of the experience of throwing out the like financial markers.
Oh, yeah.
That we've had.
Well, then we'll do two more things. So I just want to talk a little bit about the man's perspective of providing.
Okay. Do you want to talk about that first, or do you want to talk about that?
Yes, actually. I think it would be a better lead into the throwing out the markers.
Because in the end, we can just talk about trust, and we trust in the Lord. And
yeah, that's a good place to lead.
Finish it off. Tell us about the man's perspective of providing and what that means to you.
And so, yeah, I think you have the practical aspect of it as well. So when it comes to the male's role of providing, I think there's this great quote that I shared on my story the other day from Dave Ramsey that says, yeah. Yes, God feeds the birds of the sky, but he does not drop worms into their nests. And this kind of goes into, I have a recent YouTube video that I did on just kind of encouraging men, if you're going to study theology, study something else as well. There's nothing bad with studying theology. I believe in liberal arts. I think it's all good.
Can I say something on that?
Yeah.
I remember my theology professors telling the men in my class that as well
yeah.
in college. Like I remember there was one moment where a theology professor like encouraged the
said
guys.
This.
Yeah.
And I think I've often said since I left college, if I could go back in time, I would have done philosophy, maybe even theology. Why is that? Because I know in my path of life, I went on to be an infantry officer, graduated from Ranger School, deployed, served as an executive officer, left as a captain, and got out and was offered many things because of those 4 years and yeah. who I had become in the process.
Yeah.
That's why I wish that I would have done it, because I was still getting a lot of offers for lucrative church positions as well as lucrative secular positions in project management and other leadership roles. And so to me, I was like, yeah, I could go back and do it. If I was 20 years old and not in ROTC, would I encourage somebody to do that? No, I wouldn't. Yeah. Maybe as a minor, but I also think that we underestimate and undervalue how much free education there is in the world.
Yeah.
You know, like I think just the fact that I was offered, I told the person, because we forget so much when we leave college anyways, right? It's just a fact
yeah.
that I told, I remember being in a youth minister interview when I was getting out of the army, and I applied for this role, and this woman was like, you don't have, she was like very, very degree heavy
yeah.
as an individual. And she wasn't the she obviously wasn't the pastor. He was the final decision maker, but she was like the DRE or something. And
yeah.
she was like in studying to get her master's in theology. And she's just like, how can you, you know, teach this or be a youth minister if you don't even have a theology degree? And I said, ma'am, I'd be willing to go toe to toe with anybody who's 26, 4 years out of college. I'd be willing to go toe to toe with them on any like FAQs of teenagers. I said, ask me a question. She said, what's the church teaching on contraception? And I go off for like 2.5 minutes, crush it. And she was just like, that was pretty good. And I was like, it was, wasn't it? I was doing a lot
there
of father my
when, I mean, I did 4 years of theology, and there are times when you teach me things.
Yeah, we have
I teach you
strengths.
Some random like
Yep.
But like to be able to explain dogma and doctrine, I feel like you're stronger at that for sure.
Yeah. It's just different strengths. And I mean, like reading books and podcasts and all that stuff, like you learn a lot.
Yeah.
And you can still know the things. And it's good to have hobbies, but your career is different than your hobbies.
Yeah.
It's beautiful when they match up.
Yeah.
But it's seldom that they get to. This is my hobby. It's not my career. My career is in sales. And I enjoy podcasting a lot more than sales. But sales brings in the big bucks while podcasting brings in the little bucks. And so hopefully podcasting will someday bring in the big bucks, but it doesn't yet. And so it's like I build this on the side, right? After the work day, we come in and we do this together while we're trying to build this thing. But it's not the main thing. And I think that there's a lot of books out there I would recommend to men. If you have a husband that you want to learn more about this stuff, or if you're a man that wants to learn more about just financial acumen and producing and how you can set up your family for financial success, I'm happy to talk with you about it. There's many good books that I think a lot of times Catholics don't read these books. Things like Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki is a classic because he has some stuff that's not Catholic, right? And they're going to share things that aren't conducive to Catholic teaching. And I don't think there's anything really immoral in Rich Dad, Poor Dad, but sometimes the focus can be overly on money. I think a lot of Dave Ramsey stuff is really good from the Christian perspective. But what I always encourage, especially men, to do, and what I hope a lot of Seeking Excellence does for people, is taking these secular books, something like Atomic Habits, right? Rich Dad, Poor Dad, or there's plenty of other things, 12 Rules for Life, right? And you take the wisdom out of it, ignore and shred out the things that are not conducive to the Catholic faith, but you take the wisdom that does apply to our faith and you actually embody that and you implement it into your life, right? And that's what I think a lot of these things have done for me. Grant Cardone says some wild stuff. Has some of this stuff been helpful in my goal setting and just financial planning and getting after it? Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
But I don't take spiritual advice or family advice from him.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any use in becoming a billionaire, which is a major goal of his, you know? But like, what is your goal income that you want to make in today's world? I think we have to get past and be realistic about the fact that six figures is not it. If you're living in one of these expensive cities like Denver, Washington, D.C., Seattle, anywhere in California, New York, Philadelphia, like this is $100,000 is not enough.
Yeah.
And so you as a theology major, you're thinking like, oh, well, maybe I could work as the DRE or at the Archdiocese and make 85K. It's like 85K is not it. Especially, and that's talking about, if you want to get into having 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 kids, you got to be able to think about what are some alternative routes that I can take and getting interested in things like sales, things like real estate, things like other side hustles that you can create, right? That's why, like you were just describing, we have multiple things going on because I'm thinking about, okay, we only have one kid now and I see how it's still fairly tight, especially being in sales because it's so seasonal, right? Yeah. The early half of the year is kind of tighter for us and then we get a lot of reprieve in the summer and into the fall.
Well, and very practically, like one of the only reasons why I was able to stop working at the Archdiocese was because many months prior, you came up with the decision or like the idea to Airbnb and house hack and different things like that.
Yep.
So that would eventually replace my income. And it did.
After listening to probably hundreds of hours of real estate podcasts and reading several real estate investing books.
But it's only through that, which was like, you know, having this like foresight to like think about like, I don't even think we were pregnant with Jordan when we were, no, we found out we were pregnant with Jordan the day we, or the week we found out we could move into the house. So we had already like gone through the whole house hunting journey. We had already closed on the house, all that kind of stuff, had the rent back with the people that were there before.
Yeah.
You know, like all those things. I wasn't even pregnant with Jordan yet, but we knew that this was like a goal. And then we knew the only way to do it was some sort of like side hustle.
Yeah. If like we wanted Airbnb to own a house.
Or if we wanted to own a house.
Or we could have continued renting an apartment and downgraded our apartment.
But
and
then
stuff like that
set us up to start, you know, investing in real estate and different things like that, which has now helped with my lack of income.
To roll on. Yeah. You start to compile things.
Yeah.
I think reinvesting is such a big thing. Not enough people do that. We just did another investment into speaking for me and just kind of taking some of the money that you start to build up. And I'm always thinking about, you know, one of my big things is always thinking about how can we have more money 5, 10 years from now?
Yeah.
And creating 5 and 10 year and 20 year and 30 year plans to think about, okay, if I compound this, like what can I do when I'm 65? Like a lot of guys aren't coming to their family with that type of vision. And that's what you have to start to develop. I wasn't taught that.
Well, and it's also not like just take the ignorance. You say that like surface level, it sounds like really like materialistic maybe, but like we want to have this money so that we can like have a nice house for our kids and like have those 6 to 7, 8
and not homeschool on the couch.
Yeah. You know, yeah. To like have like a classroom almost like in our house and that kind of stuff, you know, have those things.
And we love hosting people.
We love, yeah. I love gifting people with gifts, you know, like different things like that. Like I'd like that those things to be like comfortable, you know. And God willing,
it's why tithing and stuff is so important now that you don't just wait and you know and say that you want to do it then. But yeah, and there's nothing wrong with it. You have to have this healthy detachment. I just did a video recently talking about that of just this central word. Oh, it was from The Great Divorce. That was kind of reflecting. I did a YouTube video on it where I was talking about how C.S. Lewis writes in there that like there's this central word of detachment in that undergirds. It's actually Bishop Barron, but it was tied together between The Great Divorce and this gospel reflection. And Bishop Barron says that the undergirding, like the under theme of the gospels is detachment. And so we create all of these plans and God has better plans than us. And I try to do it prayerfully, of course, as well. And you kind of go with like the things that he's given you as desires. John Eldridge's book, Desire, I think really does a good job of describing the fact that God, like the things that excite us and the things we have desires for are not inherently bad.
Yeah.
What's bad is when we start to sacrifice our faith and our morals and God for those things.
Yeah.
Right. And so for me, it's really important now that I work next door to the church, like I'm spending my time in prayer. If I'm doing my 30 minutes in the church every day, then the things that I'm working to outside of it, I think are good.
Yeah.
When they start to overtake that, that's when it's bad.
For sure.
Right. When they start to take away from I cut out my prayer time and then I cut out my family time for the sake of pursuing more and more money and just having more. Yeah. That's dangerous.
That's dangerous. Yeah. For sure.
But when you're doing it all in alignment and I'm spending a great time with my wife, going away so we can celebrate our anniversary and do a little staycation, that costs money.
Yeah.
Right. Going on family vacation this year. We didn't go on one last year. That's going to cost us money.
Yeah.
All of these things are expensive. And so just to be able to have things when somebody else needs something, to be able to be a person that has a little bit of extra to give them.
Yeah.
You know, is not a bad thing. And all it takes, it doesn't take a lot more work. It just takes more discipline, a little bit more intentionality, and a little bit more planning and vision. Yeah. So that we can actually make the most of the time that we have and the things that we have. And how can we take the money we have and reinvest it so we have more 10, 20, 30 years from now?
Amen.
That's what people are missing.
I love it.
But there is a huge element going along with detachment with trust.
With trust.
Because you have to be willing to say, okay, maybe it doesn't work out. Maybe I pour my life into this podcast, never make any money from it. I give all my money to people who are editing everything and then it just kind of goes to zero. Who knows, right? Yeah. It could all kind of come crumbling down. You never have any idea really, but...
And that's where I was going to leave it. It was just this last story that I love telling people nowadays.
Please.
I was working part-time. We had these like financial markers, all this kind of stuff going into this year, going into 2024.
Mm-hmm.
And still just like feeling this tension, especially as Jordan was getting older and like more mobile and more aware of things. You know, I wasn't able to get my emails and my work done as well. And I just felt like I was always exasperated and that I would see him if he like didn't sleep well, if he was having a bad day, I would get like angry at him because I didn't get to do my emails. And it was like almost like, am I even being home? You know, am I even like getting to like be with him and all this kind of stuff that we had hoped for? And so the real tipping point for us was Seek, the Seek conference.
Oh, Lord.
If anybody saw us at Seek, we were a literal mess. We both were working full time. We didn't have a babysitter with us. So whoever wasn't working.
We did not have a good time.
We did not have a good time at Seek. And not only that, no fault of Seek, no fault of our employers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any of that stuff. We were just like.
Straight up circumstance.
Whoever wasn't working, the booth was with the baby. I would like put the baby down and then I would go work the like 9 to 11 p.m. like shift. And if you know me, I don't go to bed after 9:30.
Yeah.
The goal is 9. And so it was a tipping point and I even felt bad. Like I didn't feel like I was present to my work either. You know, like I felt like I was like letting my team down in some senses, you know, in different things. And so that was like kind of the tipping point. And we had very crucial conversation when we came home in these chairs, actually. And it was just like at a certain point, Nathan was just like, okay, fine. We like, why don't you just stop kind of, you know? And while I was at Seek and that at the same time, I'm reading this book about like Summa Domestica. I saw a post on Instagram that was talking about like the same thing that this girl, she thought that she had just like the perfect setup when she had her baby, she had a part-time job and it just still was like not like, you know, going well. And she quit it like 6 months in. And then I was talking with a huge mentor of mine who's a mom of six, seven kids. And she was just talking about being at the SEED conference and being just a support for her husband who was, you know, working through throughout the conference and everything like that. And I was just asking her about that, and she's asking me about these markers, and she just said, you guys should just surrender it. Like, you should surrender it and see like what happens, you know, like surrender the finances and all that kind of stuff. And so once we made that decision, you know, I talked with West Coast Catholic and I talked with Mari and Trey and told them we had made that decision. And it was like weirdly hard, but I just knew like we were going to dive in. And like within 2 or 3 weeks, some like other financial opportunities came up for us as a family. And you got a promotion at work, which all made up the difference of what we would be losing now with me stepping aside. And to me, that just was, somebody told us to surrender it. And I was like, all right, let's surrender it to the Lord. And then the Lord provided like literally within the month.
Yeah.
You know, and there's like
been
you said,
even more opportunities, like things have come up.
And so many things have come up since we like literally since Seek, all these like other, you know, streams of income, potential streams of income and stuff like that have come up. And so it's just been like really beautiful to see. Yeah. The Lord.
For sure.
Yeah. And like you said, it all could come crashing down, but you just trust in the Lord and that he will provide. And if you have your priorities right,
right,
you know,
he'll provide. You got to have that Philippians, you know, 4:11-12 mindset of I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, obviously verse 13, but being able to be content in all situations, right? And St. Paul talks about being able to live in abundance and need, in plenty and in want. That's what it's really all about, right? And recognizing like, okay, and that's something that we continue to grow in, you know, in realizing like, okay, there's still some months where it's tighter, or there's times where we go through periods, or we did a no spend January just to kind of reset for the year and just be like, okay, no additional spending this month, nothing. We're continuously testing out different ways of budgeting each month, and you know, it's always growing, you know, you know what I mean? But ultimately, we got to a place where we just gave it over to God. We're like, this is what we feel like you're calling us to, and we want to do what your will is for our lives. And so we trust in you, and it's definitely been a lot better. And I think we're excited for you to be more fully present and be able to walk away from the part-time work, and excited to hire you here at Seeking Excellence.
I guess when I say I'm walking away from part-time work, I am going to be working for Nathan outside of the home.
That's right.
In some senses.
Yeah. Well, it'll still be inside the home.
In the home, but like for Seeking Excellence.
In the home mission.
Not necessarily doing in the home mission. There you go.
Which is
see,
great.
We're all on the same team.
Yeah.
We're all on one team.
More thoroughly, I think, on the same team in this, which is great. So with that being said, a huge shout out to our local supporters for Seeking Excellence. We're very grateful for you, especially the new local supporters that joined this year so far. We've had some great new supporters, and that's gotten us to a point where that's not really losing money for us anymore. I think we're pretty close to a break-even point. We're going to continue to be stretching the break-even point for a while as we keep investing into better video quality, video editing, and things like that. There's lots to pay for, and lots of, you know, ideas that I have that we're going to be bringing to life here soon. So we're very excited about that. So thank you to those who support the podcast, because you make all of this possible, and the better camera quality. Now we have two cameras. So we got
this
two
is so fun
cameras now, which is really great. And so we're excited for that. And just super grateful for the people who believe in the mission and value the content enough to want to participate in all of the content. So as I've said before, in recent weeks, we have more and more content going up on Locals each week, doing live streams, articles, videos that are being uploaded from there that are come from YouTube. And then we obviously have the podcast here that's available to everyone. A lot of the content on Locals is free. Some of it is for subscribers only. We're going to be doing another book club here in the fall. Emily is going to be joining me for some of the live streams and content that we'll be doing on Locals as well, which I'm very excited for. And we'll be diving more deeply into some of these practical things. So a lot of the live streams are geared towards what I call coaching calls. And so every other week is going to be spiritual coaching, you know, kind of Bible study or just reflections on the spiritual life. And then the other weeks we'll be focused on the other six pillars. And that's where we're going to deep dive into things like budgeting. So if you're wondering about, you know, Rich Dad Poor Dad, what does it talk about? Like, I'm going to be going into these books that have changed my life that come from these different pillars and really analyzing, like, what is an asset? What is a liability? We're going to be getting into the practicals of excellence. And so if you want to join for some of those things, like I said, a lot of it's free, some of it's paid, but you can join for as little as $10 a month as a supporter and get access to all of that content. And so we invite you to join us on Locals. Thank you for being a listener, a supporter of the mission. Even if you're not able to financially support now, and you share the podcast, you review the podcast, you Even just listen to it. We really appreciate that. It means a lot to us. And we're grateful to have you on the team as well as we strive to share this message with the world. So Emily, thank you for joining me today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. And until next time, for all of you out there, be your best. God bless you.